overlooking the backstage area at the Next Gen tournament, Milan. What are you looking at down there, Gary?
I'm watching Tsitsipas. He walks over.
You look like one of those dogs with a bouncing, wobbly head in the backs of cars. Actually, I haven't seen one of those in yonks. Until you, that is.
But I'm watching his actual walk. He's bouncing.
Show me the bounce, as Jay-Z would say. And he is showing me.
It's the walk of the victor. The Tsitsipas bounce.
Show me the bounce. The Tsitsipas bounce. The Tsitsipas bounce. The Tsitsipas bounce. Tsitsipas. Drop Shot, Chapter 5, The Tsitsipas Bounce. Gary, I want to talk to you. I've got to talk to you. It's important to talk to you. You've got a real thing about Tsitsipas. I think you're just kind of jealous of my sort of burgeoning friendship with Alex Demenau, and you needed to have somebody that you could support. And something about Tsitsipas grabbed you from the first moment you saw him, and then even watching you almost stalking him from the top of the stairs, watching him walk across the whole arena. But there is something there for you, isn't
he
there?
Was bouncing across.
Okay, he was bouncing, doing the Tsitsipas bounce. But that kind of, that really intrigued you, that whole thing, because you think that symbolises something.
It does. I think it symbolises a very confident person. I think that when you see sportsmen, they are very just down the line. They have their character trained out of them and they don't really express themselves in that way. Now, we've been fortunate in our line of work, whether it's been in football or tennis or another line, that we get to see behind the scenes when the cameras are off. But to see him, the way he conducts himself, where everyone can see, and it's almost like he's just not aware. And I just really like that about him, that as you saw him walking across to a press conference where he's not exactly getting grilled, but he's just happy, he's springy, he's bouncy, and he's just very relaxed. And I responded to that because it just shows a character, and I like characters in sport. You know, we spoke about in chapter 2 of Drop Shot about the American dream, and we started talking about John McEnroe and why I like McEnroe. And I think you look at Tsitsipas, he's not the super brat, but he's got an element of that about him. And that's what I responded to when we were with him for the week in Milan.
Also, that whole moment, I think, that Tsitsipas bounce moment, I think what it showed was you saw a moment where he's away from cameras. He's got no idea that you're still watching him. And he's actually in a moment of happiness. He is with one other person walking across, and you can see he's actually being affected by what's happened. The win has it's not just a job at the moment for him. He's young enough where he's enjoying the whole process.
And if our listeners would like to go onto our Instagram and our Twitter, they can also see how happy Stefanos and I were during the press conference when you got the photographic evidence of it, Kerry.
Ah, yes, you setting up the mics, having little chats with him. Yeah, but he was very personable, wasn't he?
He was. He's a very personable guy, and it was something that we responded to, and I think that you see that come across in the way he plays tennis.
I mean, he's very free, he's very easy, but he's very, very linear in his thinking. You can see that he's working out the way to play his opponent, the way to win that point. He looks as though he's got everything about him, and I think he's going to be... I guess, you know, you look at the youngsters, you know, at this moment in time, you'd say Team is probably the eldest of that young brigade that's coming through. And then, of course, you've got Zverev. But Tsitsipas is not far away, is he?
And he has the best hair.
Okay. Oh, you and grooming again. Yes, I think we've talked about this in the past. You like a man who's got hair.
Like me.
Well, you haven't got that much of it.
On my face.
Well, you've got way more on your chin.
I appreciate a groomed sportsman.
Okay, right. I think we probably need to get this back to a sensible subject here.
From here, from a pseudo-friend of Tsitsipas, let's talk to an actual friend of the Tsitsipas family, who was Maritza Georgitsis.
And she's really interesting because she's known him for a long, long time.
I know Stefanos since he was a little kid. I know his dad. His dad was a tennis coach. I was playing tennis when I was a young girl. So I know his mom, his dad. I know them for 25 years now. And I know Stefanos since he was a little kid. And the one thing I can tell you for sure, that he's still the same, so sweet guy. He's a very sweet guy and a very nice kid. He's a very nice guy. He's very gentle. He's very sweet. What else can I tell for Stefanos? I only have to say, the only things I can say for Stefanos are good things. I think that his parents, they did a very good job with Stefanos. They are four brothers and sisters. He's not the only one. But he's very gentle, he's very kind, he's very nice with people. And I think he's also really nice in the court. He's a gentleman. Because I was playing tennis, you know, and his dad was a tennis coach, so we were moving in the same areas, the tournaments. His mom also was playing tennis, so that's why I know his dad. You know, when I used to play tennis, there were not so many people playing tennis in Greece. So we all knew each other. That's why I know Apostolos so well. He knows me since I was like this. And we have a very good communication between us. We are friends. I can say that we are friends with the Tsitsipas family.
That was Maritza talking to us about her relationship and friendship with the Tsitsipas family. And in our first episode of Drop Shot, Chapter 1, she also explained how to pronounce his name correctly. Can you remember what it is, Kerry?
Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Good attempt. But I just thought we would...
Perfect attempt.
Yeah, perfect attempt. I thought that it would be a good opportunity now just to talk about Maritza, because she was an interesting character away from the tennis. And I remember you accosted her on the first day when I was telling you not to.
Accosted her? What do you mean by that?
Well, you grabbed her in the press room and you started talking.
Well, yeah, but from a purely journalistic point of view, because I'd overheard her talking about Tsitsipas and how she was there for Greek television just to concentrate on what he was up to. And I thought this might be quite interesting to get a viewpoint from somebody who obviously knows this guy and has followed his career.
And from there, we were able to find out some interesting facts and details about Tsitsipas as a player.
I think since he was a very young kid, since he was 10, 11, you could see that he was very talented, Stefanos. I remember I saw him when he was 12 or 13 years old. He was playing in a tournament in Athens, an open tournament. He was playing doubles with his dad. And I remember everyone at the club was staring at Stefanos, and they were all saying that this kid is going to be a very good tennis player. You could see from when he was 11, 12, 13 that he was very talented. Tennis was very easy for him. I will tell you one thing. In Greece, nobody knows about tennis. Suddenly, everybody knows about tennis. We have many coffee shops in all over Greece. You know, people, they go sit and drink coffee for 2-3 hours, and they watch or football or basketball. When Stefanos was playing his two finals against Rafa in Barcelona and in Toronto, the cafeterias, they weren't playing basketball or football, but they were playing. They had tennis on TV. I think I would never expect to see something like that. But suddenly, everybody in Greece, they know Stefanos. He's our hero. I've said it a few times to my friends. I think that Stefanos is going to win a Grand Slam. I don't know if it's going to be 1 or 2 or 3 or 10, but I think he has the potential to be number one in the world, and he has the potential to win a Grand Slam. And I truly believe that.
In One thing we discovered about Tsitsipas throughout the week was how mature he is as a player. He's still very young as an adult, let alone a tennis player, but I think the way that he conducted himself throughout the week, I made the point in previous episodes that it felt like he knew he was the number one ranked player there, and when he had his opportunities to set the agenda with the media, that he did.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I think there's something really quite miraculous to watch when you see guys like this step up to the plate. He actually understands where he is in the world. He understands his place. Now, that sometimes gets misconstrued. And I know that there were some journalists that were suggesting that he was arrogant, that he was, you know, cocky before it was time for him to be so. And actually, I didn't see that. I saw a man who was confident, believed in himself, but also wasn't going to take any rubbish from people. And he wanted things to be a certain way.
I think as well, when you see some of the issues going on in tennis in the modern game, and especially at the back end of last year, which has been an ongoing talking point, has been the situation with the amount of matches that players have to play, the amount of travel in the schedule, and you know this concern about the fatigue of players. And you see that it will be Djokovic, it will be Nadal, it will be Federer, and the other leaders that are setting that agenda in press conferences, and the ones that aren't afraid to talk about it. So we made light of it, of Talgate, but it seemed to be that Tsitsipas had just turned up and he knew that he was number one and that he was the senior player there. And it was almost like in the locker room, he said, look, guys, I've got this. And then because as we found in the previous episodes that we've had up to now, is that Tao thing kept coming up, but it was Stefanos that really put it out first. And it is only Tao's, and it is something that is, you know, very silly to talk about, but at the same time, it's important. And I think that that side of him, aside from being the player, is something that we both responded to.
Yeah, I responded to him every time I heard him speak. And actually, what I think's really interesting is that he isn't just about the game. You know, he does an awful lot outside the game, reports on his life, doesn't he? I mean, it's like he's got his vlog that he does all the time out on YouTube.
It's not a vlog. I think you're selling it cheap there.
Okay, vlog. Some people say vlog. Is that what you mean?
But it's a good opportunity now because you bring that up. So he does have his YouTube channel and he puts a lot of good content on there. And there was a very interesting video that he put up this year about a time when he went jumping into the sea with some friends and it nearly came out worse off.
So this is the story of the day I was supposed to lose my life. It was the middle of October in 2016. Me and my friends, my dad, we decided to go on an early morning jog run in the beach. It was a rest day for all of us. We all didn't play any matches. We were all there in that island to play specifically Futures, which is professional level of tennis tournaments that we signed for and we had to go to compete. And we stayed in this beautiful, fancy resort, which included tennis courts in which the tournament was held. So yeah, it was a day off basically, and we decided to go on an early morning run with two of my friends and my dad as well. I remember getting up early and going for 30, 45 minutes of running and fitness, exercise, a bit of cardio. And after that, the day started pretty well. Then after that, we decided to go to have sauna, which because it was, as I said, it was getting close to winter at that time and it was pretty cold. We decided to go for some sauna. We spent there, I think, around 20, 25 minutes in the sauna. And then me and my other friend decided to go to the beach to refresh ourselves with some seawater. It was a very stormy day, very well conditions to actually swim that day. So we decided to jump in the sea without understanding or having any clue of what was going to happen to us later on. We jumped. I remember jumping in the sea. As I said, it was a very stormy day, big waves, very rough conditions. But we weren't actually supposed to go swimming for very long. We were just supposed to refresh ourselves with instead of taking a shower or a cold bath. It was cold anyways in the sea, so we decided to jump in there. And I remember jumping in the sea and hitting my foot on a rock. And then I remember turning back after hitting my leg on that rock and looking back, and I remember being 30 or 40 meters away from the beach without even understanding what was going on. It was the weirdest sensation of all times. I never felt so strange and so lost in time. And we basically started struggling with all the waves. The waves were getting bigger and bigger. It was, as I said, very stormy, and there was a lot of wind that day. I don't remember any red flag in the beach or any lifeguard being there. But I remember that I started feeling a sense of panic. Me and my friend were kind of, we really didn't know from where it came from. It was a very weird sensation. If there was a moment where you felt in danger, or even that particular feeling that I had in that specific moment, I would recall it as the worst feeling that I ever felt in my life. It was the very first time in my life that I felt drowning, felt I couldn't take any breaths at all, felt I was completely helpless, no one was around me to help me. It was the very first time in my life that I came so close to actual death. I never really felt that feeling ever in my life, and struggling with the waves, trying to get as many breaths as possible was the worst sensation I've ever felt. I remember turning back, having a look at my friend, and I remember not seeing him around me. I couldn't find him. I remember my dad approaching the beach, and he could see that we were in some real big sh**. I remember he jumped in. That feeling that I felt was... Now let's get back to why we couldn't make it to the beach. We were trying to swim towards the beach, but it was completely impossible for us to actually make it. I remember fighting against the waves, trying to go and win some time, but it was completely impossible. I felt like as more I was trying, as less chances I had making it to the beach. Yeah, it was a very weird sensation. There was a stream under, a very tough moment to deal with. I mean, I couldn't think of anything at that moment. I didn't have anything in my mind. I remember surrendering. I remember that flashback when it felt like time froze for a moment. Nothing moved. I couldn't feel anything. There was a sudden flashback of my entire life in my head. I couldn't concentrate on the moment. I had a flashback of all my childhood years and all my good memories. And I remember drowning. I remember that feeling of dying. For a second, I thought I was dead already. Yeah. I really don't wish this to my worst enemy, if that would ever happen.
As that clip from Stefanos's YouTube channel shows, he's not just making travel videos, he's not just making videos about his life, but he's actually opening himself up in a way that you don't see from sportsmen. And it's really interesting, because for those of you who don't know you, Kerry, your background is making documentaries, and it's something we've alluded to in previous episodes. But your background, you've worked in the music business, and seeing that, you were surprised as well that there's a young sportsman making videos of that nature and putting them online.
Yeah, because what he's doing, he's being a proper documentarian of his life. And it's not just boring stuff like, oh, here I am in the hotel. Oh, here I am waiting to get my dinner. You know, he's talking his audience, his following, his fans, whatever you want to call it. He's talking them through his life. And actually, it's making him go and do interesting things. And then he doesn't just document them. He talks about things, and he then cuts these things up with cutaways, as we call them, to show you what he's talking about. He's a very intelligent guy, and I really responded to that. You know, he's making films. He's properly trying to do it, and I think it's very engaging, and I think maybe this is the way forwards for a lot more people. But it's not the easiest thing to do in the world, to be a filmmaker, and he obviously thinks about it. I've seen him sort of, there's clips of him putting GoPro cameras in places, and somebody's filmed him doing that, and then he goes back and does things again, or does things in a certain way. So he's very, very thoughtful.
He's thinking about his B-roll.
Yeah, he is thinking about his B-roll.
Explain what B-roll is for the uninitiated.
B-roll is basically all the secondary things that you shoot to help your A-roll. So your main interview, you know, when you film an interview, you always make sure at the end of the interview that you, hopefully, if you've only got one camera and the person is okay, you take some shots of their hands moving or them lifting their cup of tea or doing anything, because invariably you want to cut and edit into what you've got. So you need to not show the join of the cut visually by putting something in place of it. So you might cut from one sentence to another one further down the interview. Well, you have a close-up of them lifting their cup or something and just have the cup going out of shot, then you can cut back to another shot. But don't make it look as though suddenly there's no cup in the main shot, because that's what's known as a really bad edit.
Which we don't have.
No, we don't. That was just me pretending I'd cut my word in pieces.
It was all about survival. My dad approached me. He was there with me, trying to help me. My other friend decided to stay in the beach. I remember screaming and yelling with all the power that I had, sent some help, but it felt like he couldn't hear me. He couldn't cooperate, but it was really, I really felt alone at that moment. And having my dad approach me a couple of minutes later, he was swimming towards me, started pushing me towards the beach, and I could see the fear in his eyes. I could see the fear in my eyes. Kind of gave me hope when he was there. If we were supposed to die and lose our lives that day, we would have to do it together. He was a hero. He was just there trying to help me, didn't mind so much about himself. And I remember that moment of relief, that moment where I felt there was a hope to do something. So after my dad pushing me towards the beach, I remember I stepped on a coral reef, and it felt amazing. Was an unbelievable feeling. If there wasn't this coral reef in that area where I was struggling and fighting to survive, I don't think I would make it. And yeah, it was there. I stepped. I remember the first step that I did was the first breath that I could take after a long time, and it was like the best feeling in the world, I remember. And then I was breathing very heavy. Just felt horrible. My dad kept searching for my other friend. He actually saved him as well. I would say that he was the savior. He saved all of us. And after that, we somehow managed to make it to the beach. I don't know how. That coral reef actually helped, definitely. That was everything. I remember stepping out of the beach. I remember I was laying in the sand for at least 15-20 minutes after that, trying to figure out how all of this happened. Just a whole adventure. We had an adventure that we never expected would occur. And that was the day that I saw life with a different perspective. I gave more value into my life. I remember saying to myself, after this, you cannot feel fear. This is the worst you can never get. I remember after that how much psychologically this whole experience changed me as a person, as an individual. I felt fearless. I felt like I could do anything after that. It was a moment of appreciation for me, my family and my friends, for not being dead in that beach that day. It wasn't supposed to happen, but it did. And I appreciate God or whoever was there at that moment. Just save us, give us an opportunity to fight back. And I appreciate that. I really do. Thank you for watching. That was my story. Bye bye.
Gary, if you remember, in Chapter 2, Maylene Ramey from Outside the Ball gave us an interesting view of working with the players away from the court. And as someone who oversees the creative output of a video platform, she has an interesting perspective on how Stefanos is using social media and how his videos engage with tennis fans.
Yeah, so one of the cool things about having this channel is wanting to understand these players as people and what they enjoy doing off court. So oftentimes, a lot of them I know, sometimes I haven't met them. And when I go to an event where I haven't met the player, I do a lot of research, which usually involves going on their social media, checking out what they do with their friends, their family. And Tsitsipas is a really interesting guy. He's very likable. He's very cool. He's obviously an up-and-coming player. He's the one to watch. But until I found his YouTube channel, I didn't realize how cool he actually is. I mean, this guy has a vlog. He started a travel vlog a couple years ago. And over the years, he has really honed his skills as a videographer, as an editor, and as a storyteller. And there's a well-known vlogger, YouTuber called Casey Neistat. And I think he takes a lot of his style from him. He's got cool music, really amazing shots. Like when he travels as a tennis player, you're already traveling with your tennis gear, your bags. He's also bringing his video equipment, his lenses. He's got prime lenses, tripods, the works. And he really tells a cool story, behind the scenes look into his life on his YouTube channel. It's worth checking out. The young players understand that they're not only an athlete, but they're a brand, and not just a brand, they're also a media brand. So each one of them, through their social media, they have an opportunity to connect with their fans, they have an opportunity to promote their brands, and people can get to know them and their personalities as well. So I think the young players, it's just part of their generation, they understand it, and they really enjoy it.
And the thing is about Stefanos, he really is a player of his times.
I think he is. And it's interesting because as you have the older players moving on, which is what the whole point of this first series of Drop Shot is about, it's just interesting seeing the difference in the dynamic between a player like Stefanos and Roger Federer. Now, I'm not saying that Stefanos is going to go on and achieve anything like what Federer has, but players from that era, and even with Djokovic and Nadal, they are pure sportsmen. They turn up, they play tennis. We know them for playing tennis. Whereas now, with players of the millennial generation, they're coming through and they are sportsmen, but they're personalities as well. And it's different where we might lament the fact that the personalities don't exist in sport anymore in the way that they might have done in the 60s and 70s. But I think you're seeing personalities come back into it in a far more educated and intelligent way. He's not a personality because he's out drinking and partying in New York. He's a personality because people are following him on YouTube who aren't necessarily tennis fans. They're following him because he's a personality to them through his travel blogs.
But also, the thing that makes him different and the thing that makes people like this in this position in this day and age unique is he's actually offering insight into him as a person and his world. It's not, as I was saying earlier, it's not just the pretense of, oh, here I am with some glamorous people and maybe I'll have a little beer or something later. It's just not like that. This is him engaging you, the audience, with his world. And I think that's really interesting.
And that's why I think that he is, like you said, very much a player of his time, because the generation that Stefanos is from, they've grown up with social media. They've grown up with the internet. And we'll look at the videos he makes and they're not necessarily at the level of Martin Scorsese or a Kerry Levy maybe, but they're well put...
Flatterer.
But they are well put together videos. They're well put together videos where he's someone who knows what he's doing. He knows how to carry a narrative. He knows how to tell a story. And we often talk about sportsmen not being able to, you know, engage and hold a conversation outside of their sport, and suddenly you've got this kid here that can.
Yeah, and the thing is, what he's doing is he's setting up... We are now seeing an age whereby people are not watching TV in the same way. So he is as valid as any sort of terrestrial TV channel. And it's just tailor-made for those people who just want to see inside his life and inside his world. So, you know, you can have the BBC, you can have NBC, you can have Fox News, you can have BBC Two, you can have Channel 4, you can have all these different channels. But he has his own channel. And that is what fascinates his crowd, his fans, his following, and it allows him to express himself. And it's not, some could say that that was completely egotistical, but it just doesn't seem to be that way, because he's never saying, I, me, follow me, I'm the greatest. It's just purely a look at his life. And it probably came across, came out of the fact that he probably got bored one day and showed what he'd shot to somebody, and somebody said, you should share that. And I reckon that's probably how it developed.
I like that you raised that point as well, because about him being bored, because when we spoke to David Nankin, who is Taylor Fritz's coach in Chapter 2, he said about the challenge of trying to keep the players interested and engaged in what is a monotonous lifestyle. And while Taylor's playing Fortnite, which is great because it keeps him engaged and it keeps him, you know, active away from the court rather than being sat there with wondering what to do, you've got Stefanos on Adobe Premiere and he's there cutting it up and putting his videos out online. I think they're videos that are interesting videos, and they're videos that have got something to say.
Yeah, it's content, you know, and as we always say in filmmaking, content is king. Well, you know, you've got a successful tennis player travelling around the world in extraordinary places, extraordinary circumstances, and he's documenting all these things in an interesting way. What's not to like?
Aside from YouTube channels and documentaries, we've got to remember we are talking about a tennis player, and that is why we're here. We're talking about a tennis player. And what I like about Stefanos is that the player we saw pre, during Milan and post Milan is a player who's very much dedicated to his craft and someone who is on course to achieve something in his career.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. You know, the main issues for somebody of his age, what is he, just 20, is to avoid injury. If you avoid injury in those years, that period just before you join the main tour, I think you've got a good chance of staying fit. And from what I can see, he seems fit, healthy. He's worked himself into the tour really well. He's established. He's in the top players already. Having made it into the top 10 already at his age, you know that he's there for some time now. He's established himself, and some would say he's not even really begun. So it's frightening where his skill, his dedication, and his ability could take him to. I'm really looking forward to seeing the next few years of his career, because I think we're seeing the birth of a very, very special player.
And it was a special player that we saw in Milan, and he went on to lift the Next Gen trophy against your boy, Alex.
Yeah, he did. It's true. He did what a number one should.
And he did it, though, in the way that TFO was hoping he would do it. He didn't lose a match, and therefore he brought home that £400,000 paycheck that TFO was all about.
Yeah, absolutely. But you don't get the feeling that... I don't know how money affects these guys at that age.
I'm just joking, but it was funny because TFO made the joke about it, didn't he? About it's all about the Benjamins in a very humorous way, and to see Stefanos go on and do it.
Yeah,
but you've got to imagine there might have been a little bit of envy there.
You never know, but I think these guys are pretty adjusted to what they can and can't do, what they do and don't win on the tour. Because I should imagine, especially growing up, you get more failures than successes in so many tournaments, especially once you're in that crossover. You can be the best junior in the world. How you cross over into the senior tour is where it becomes interesting. You know, many, many of those kids suffer immediate losses, loss of confidence, loss of form. So we'll see how he goes. But already to be in the top 10 is quite a magnificent achievement.
So Stefanos was the leader of the Next Gen at the Next Gen. But of course, there are other leaders beyond Stefanos. We've mentioned Kachanov previously. We've mentioned Zverev. And there are other players that are there or thereabouts that are ready to pounce ahead of these younger players. And in our episode next week, Chapter 6, we're going to be looking at the rest of these players.
Yeah, I think it's an exciting time for tennis. We've talked about this all through the series so far. There are a group of players who are in there to disrupt the natural order of things and become the next generation of players that are going to take over the tennis world. Until next time, this is Drop Shot. Dropshot is written and produced by Gary Hayes and me, Kerry Levy. Audio editing and sound mixing by Sounds Like These. Special thanks to Ollie Slack and Taylor Hayes. Music for this episode was composed by Jimmy Goodwin. Our thanks go out to Mark Epps and Edward LaCava from the ATP. We would also like to thank Maritza Georgitsis and Maylene Ramey. Find us on Instagram and Twitter at This Is Dropshot. This has been a PML Studio production.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Dropshot, leave a review, tell a friend, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.